in Patia, which in those days was quite a small small town, rather larger than a village, fishing town on the Gulf of Thailand. And so they started shipping over tens of thousands of young men to Patia, because that's a very swift, an hour's flight from Saigon, now Ho Chi Minh City. The inevitable result of that was that if you get tens of thousands of young men with more money than sense who are likely to be shot when they go back on active service, is that they're looking for the flesh and the drink, and so inevitably Patia became a den of iniquity. It attracted ladies from all over the country, bearing in mind that Patia is, that Thailand is also an incredibly poor country. And they flocked to Patia in their tens of thousands to deal with this influx of young men. So if you want a villain, I suppose you've got to talk about JF Kennedy or Lyndon B. Johnson. But that's politicians. Having said that, prostitution in Thailand is not quite the evil thing that we would think of it over here. This abject poverty is such that although nobody would be proud that their daughters or sons were indulging in that trade, it is accepted. And being pragmatic, there are an awful lot of folk in Thailand who would be dying of starvation were it not for that trade. And what has happened with the, after the Vietnam War is that obviously the young American servicemen moved away and in came tourists, because Thailand is a beautiful country and there's an awful lot to be seen. Tourists from all over the world, and it became that Patia was the focus for many of these tours for guys who, in particular, who weren't very much interested in seeing the delights of the countryside, shall we put it that way. It also attracted some less desirable things. One obviously got to talk then about the current problems of the drugs and so forth. I mean, you know, it really is a den of iniquity. This also attracted a lot of small children. And again, you get an element who were attracted to small children. We all know Gary Glitter and things of this nature. So that's the background to how Patia became what it is today. Today it is populated with go-go bars, bar girls, the sex trade is rampant. Father Ray Brennan, an Irish-American, born in Chicago, 1932, had a vocation, became a priest. He joined the Redemptorist Order. Their main function, they're known as preachers. And very good they are too. They're very strong in the States. And they have missions in Thailand. And Father Ray, in 1961, was sent to northern Thailand, the Golden Triangle area, Laos, Burma and Thailand, up in that corner, just north of Chiang Mai, where Janet's been, and possibly some of the others of you on your tours. Up there, he learnt to speak Thai, which is very, very difficult, and created his parish. But at the same time, his parish bordered on Laos. The boundary there is the Mekong River. It's the headwaters of the Mekong up there. And Father Ray used to sneak across very illegally into Laos and minister to the American troops who were then serving in Laos, because that was all part of the Vietnam situation that we remember from those of us who are old enough to remember from, you know, 40-odd years ago now. And so Father Ray established a great deal of contact with the American forces, and they were so grateful for him. These were guys who were stuck in the jungle, clandestine operations, and to have a priest come to hear their confessions, take them mass and generally listen to their fears, their worries. The man made a lot of very important contacts. He was sent in 1972 to Pattaya, which is another redemptorist mission area within Thailand, Church of St. Nicholas, and he became the parish priest there. How the orphanage started is, it's a little bit of a fairy story. You hear about half a dozen versions. One of the versions is that he woke up one morning and somebody had left a baby on his doorstep. Another story is that a Thai lady came along the street and thrust a baby into his arms, the baby being the Thai lady and an American serviceman father. And there are numerous other stories. I don't think I will ever know what the true start was. But Father Ray, together with his housekeeper, looked after this baby. Well, word went round in Pattaya jolly quickly, and I gather that before a fortnight was out, he had 8 babies. And he had, I think it was 58 within a month. Things went on from there. He was also a great scrounger. He was a wonderful man. He had a personality big as the side of a house. A great deal of compassion, love for his fellow man, of course, and a particular love for the children. But his word of his generosity spread around Pattaya. More and more and more children were brought to him. And may I quote from this? Father Ray grew concerned about the sudden boom in war babies and began to visit the US military in Thailand with hopes of finding ways and means of aid to care for the children. Father Ray had meetings with several officers of the army, and going back to his Laos connections, this all helps and it all knits in together, God's jigsaw. And they agreed to help fund. Father Ray said that he would like to start an orphanage. He went to the bishop, whose name I've forgotten, and I couldn't possibly pronounce it. And he said, the bishop said, it is not difficult for you to build a home for orphans and then wash your hands and go home, while it is not known where the diocese will get the money to feed these orphans. So Father Ray went on the scrounge with the American army and produced 500,000 baht, which in current terms is about £10,000. In Thai terms, that is an enormous amount, sum of money. You could literally buy more than a row of houses with that, several rows of houses. And he created that as the start of the orphanage. And that is where the whole thing began. And from thence on, Father Ray escalated upon himself. He was concerned that many, many of the children in Thailand who had various forms of handicap were not looked after. There isn't the background, there isn't the social structure in Thailand. Again, we're back to an abjectly poor country. There's nothing there to help support deaf, blind, the lame, the halt. And so he thought he would try and do something about it. Deaf children, for instance, could not join in such education as was available because they could not communicate. He arranged to open a deaf school, and he got the appropriate folk in who could teach the kids the touch things and sign language and all these. And the school for the deaf was opened in 1982. The purpose of the school: help deaf children academically in kindergarten level, got to get them young, through the use of sign language. The deaf children being prepared for further formal schooling in the primary level of the government's special schools, designed specifically for the purpose. So we've now got a group of children who would just have been tucked away, hidden from sight, totally uneducated, those children, through Father Ray's efforts, were now able to join in education. He then had the similar thoughts for the disabled, and he started with just four folk, and again, disabled folk with, you know, legs, arms, malformation, bad births, they were just tucked away, and still are in Thailand, unless they appear or is known to the Redemptorist Order. The parents, not being cruel, but they don't know what to do with them. And there isn't any background structure to aid these folk. And they tend to treat them like babies. So they never develop mentally, physically, social skills, or anything of that nature. And you get the situation where you can get 10 or 11 year old child cannot feed itself, doesn't know how to wash, can't even go to the toilet on its own. But really, there's nothing wrong, other than obviously the fact they might be missing a leg or an arm or something, but really there's no reason why it should be in that abject condition. Well, Father A found this out and recognised it, and he said, not only will we have a school, will we try and bring these people into the world and show them how to live, but we will train them for a trade. And he had the forethought that in two areas, one was repairing electrical goods. Over here, we live in the disposable society. If your electric kettle conks out, you throw it in the dustbin and go and buy a new one in Currys, don't you? 10 quid or something. No way can they afford to do that in Thailand. That's if they got an electric kettle in the first place. And so items are repaired constantly. And so he thought that he would get some electricians in, and he managed this, who would teach these folks how to do repairs. Guys in wheelchairs and so forth, it's an ideal job for them. And it worked. To this day, the school, known as Mahathai, we now have something in the order of 250 disabled folk there at any one time. They have to live in the school. They're taken there from a young age, and normally till their early 20s. As well as electrician stuff, they are now very heavily involved in computers and all aspects of computing, from the building of computers, the maintenance of them, IT control, and the general organisation of an IT department. So much so, and this has been so successful, that we have companies, Thai companies, coming to us now, coming to the Thai Children's Trust, and saying, have you got anyone who is about to qualify and pass out? We would like to give them a job, because we've employed your people in the past and they're absolutely first class. And so this is an absolutely A1 result. And we get that all the time now. In fact, I suspect that we have more job opportunities than we do young folk passing out. And it is a delight to see them day after day. I mean, Janet can tell you, in their wheelchairs, they whiz around. They have a full social life as well. They can play every sport. You should see them play basketball. You would not want to get in the way. And we were there for the King's birthday. Thais are very, very loyal. And the King is really a big deal out there. And at the home for the disabled, they had a cake. What they did was they approached every restaurant and every hotel, and there are thousands in Pattaya, and each one of their chefs produced a cream cake about the size of this table, and loads of cream, and sponge cakes, and anyway, to cut a long story short, there was a ceremony and everybody ended up with a slice of cake about like that, and you should see these folk eat it. And when the little kids from the day centre came along, the little 2-year-olds and so forth, Oh boy, there was more cream around there. So that's just touching on the home for the disabled. And it grows and grows. And we're trying, I'll come to that later, to expand that. The next project, still by this one man, Father Ray, I mean, you know, was a school for the blind, which you touched on this morning, Anne. And I know that the little girl that you sponsor, Pauline, is heavily involved. She is actually at the school for the blind. And again, the same comments apply to blind kids in Thailand, as I was saying about the handicapped and the deaf, is that they're poked away in the corner and tucked away out of sight. Well, that's not the way to deal with it. The school for the blind was opened in 86 by Father Ray with the help of Mrs. Aurora Shribuapan, that's a good name, who is a social worker and is herself blind. And she is now the principal of the school, and they currently have about 170 children there. And again, they are taught to do Braille, they're taught to do simple things, they look after themselves, they become self-sufficient. They have wonderful games of football, they have a ball with a bell in the middle. And they're an absolute delight to go and visit. The School for the Blind is a shining example, and anywhere. They've got an example here. 8-year-old Somsak was brought to the Redemptorist School for the Blind, 8 years old. He did not even know how to brush his teeth or how to chew. He'd been overprotected, carried everywhere, and fed nothing but baby food, infant food. And this is, you know, unfortunately, that is the mode that is operated. Nobody means, the parents don't mean the kids any harm. That is just the way it works. But it says here, from classrooms come the sound of drumming as children punch out answers in Braille. Music streams from the auditorium. That's very true. And it's not this nice, delicate Thai music. It's the crashing and banging rubbish that we while on the soccer court, a game is in progress for using a ball that has a bell inside it. The children are taken at the age of 3 and they stay till they're about 20. And that is what is going to happen to Sun. So she's still got a few more years. We're now coming to the murky bits, I'm afraid. There was a war in Cambodia at the same time as, you know, this was going on. Most of you saw the film The Killing Fields. Meant that an awful lot of stateless folk came over the border from Cambodia into Thailand to escape the ravages of Pol Pot and his terrible regime. And a lot of them were stuck. They could go nowhere. They couldn't get a job. They couldn't move out of the stateless camps, which were just over the border. And Father Ray felt compassion for these folk. And this guy really didn't know when he'd had enough, did he? And he then opened a home for old and stateless people. Now, the years have gone by, and a lot of those folk sadly have passed away. A lot of them went into the community. But there is still a home for, I don't know, about a dozen of them left in the complex, the Redemptorist Centre in Pattaya, where there are still about a dozen of the survivors who still inhabit that house. And the oldest one, known to all and sundry as Auntie, and she's in her 90s, well in her 90s, and in a wheelchair. So that was Father Ray's project for 1988. In 1990, he really got down to brass tacks. Going back to what I started with, Pattaya become this, you know, sin city. People all over Thailand got the idea that the streets were paved with gold. It attracted all sorts of people, including an awful lot of children. So you found children on the streets. I leave your own imaginations to figure out what happened to a lot of these poor kids. With sex tourists from all over the world coming into the town. And Father Ray went out of his way to try and get these kids off the street. and he opened to this day is known as the Street Kids Home. And kids are in there for a variety of reasons. Some have come through the police. A lot of the kids are robbing tourists. A lot of them have been brought along by the Thai social services. There are Thai social services, although they obviously haven't got the budgets or the facilities or anything like that that ours in the UK have. And kids from a very young age, I mean, we can go down to less than 2 years of age, who are involved in the sex trade. And they're brought along. I mean, I've been in a bar at 1 o'clock in the morning, and a beautiful little girl, about two or three, has come up to me and offers me a stick of chewing gum. Well, of course, nobody ever takes the chewing gum. I give her 20 baht and she goes on her way. And standing about 5 feet away, of course, is the pimp. And that is commonplace. I mean, you know, you can imagine it. I don't know how many laws in England that would break, but one would hope that the guy would get locked up and they throw the key away. That is common. And we try and get the kids out, away from it. One of the problems you've got there, though, is that if the pimp is her father and the pimpess is her mother, they cannot really force the child out of their control. Very difficult. And it's not until matters have developed a great deal further the social services and the police can act. So you've got that. Now, Father A obviously was trying to get these kids off the street. They are so vulnerable. And so he created the street, what was known as the Street Kids Home. Started in 1990. It was at first difficult to get children to stay there. There's quite a lot of attraction for young kids to go back on the street. It's exciting, it's vibrant. They're earning what to them is an enormous amount of money, although there's always a pimp in the background. In the year 2000, a new home was built several miles outside of the city centre. It's quite deliberate, because a home for street children is a mecca for paedophiles, and they were hanging around outside the door. In fact, at the new home, which is outside the city, one of the paedophiles actually hired a hitman who took a pot shot at one of the teachers at the street kids home. One of the house parents there missed, but they keep the bullet hole in. It's still the same bullet hole is still in the window as a reminder to everyone. So you've got that to contend with. They built a home. First of all, they put in about 180 boys in this home outside. The girls stayed in the old place in the city. As soon as they could, which is basically when finances permit, they got the girls out there, built another place, and currently there are about 200 boys, 200 girls out at the Street Kids Home, which is, as I say, a few miles outside the centre of Pattaya, quite deliberately. Allied to that, in 2004, we open a drop-in centre. I'm sure you're all familiar with the concept of drop-ins. Only out there, it's a bit more dangerous. We have got some people who go out. We had a place right in the centre of town, which we had, unfortunately, had to give up in December last. The guy who'd given us the ground and the building wanted it back to develop, and not unreasonably, and so we had to get out. I'll come to that. At the drop-in centre, our people go out in the town every night, and they will trawl the bars, the less salubrious places, and try and encourage young people who are indulging in their trades to come in and see another side of life. And that lady, these people are absolutely dedicated. They're not necessarily even Christians. Most of them are Buddhists. And they go out. They're in danger. We've had one man shot by a pimp because he was trying to get a girl away. And the drop-in centre is a huge success. I just, a little anecdote, little boy I know, Janet's met him, Kondo. He's a real little devil. He's full of mischief. He's a lovely child. However, lived with his mother and father. Mother disappeared. The ties are not great on long marriages. Both sides, it's men and ladies, they like a new partner from time to time. And this happens all the time. Mother cleared off, left the boy Kondo with his dad. He was 2 or 3 at the time, quite young. Can't remember how old he was, but very young. Where's Kondo on here? He is now 4. So he was about a year before that photograph. So he's about 3. His father was out of work, I think permanently. Friend of the father's had been in prison, got released from prison, came to stay with the father. And he said to the father, well, look, you know, you never get out because you've always got Kondo here. Why don't you go out and have a nice time one night? And the father did, so he went out. The released convict got himself a bottle of arak and got drunk as a skunk. Kondo cried during the night, as children do, so the guy threw him on the fire. When I first met Kondo, he was scarred from head to foot. I'd done a wonderful job on him, and he's now at our new village. But that is, he was brought to us by a mixture of the police and the social services. And he started, and when I first knew Kondo, he was at the drop-in outlet place. And he's now at our new little village. But that is symptomatic of how many of the kids have been abused. I mean, that was obviously physical abuse rather than the other sort. Which leads me on to the village, which is, you know, if I'm going on too long, David. Right. Well, you might like to pass this around. Folks, it's a picture of 29 children. It's got their ages on it as well. Little boy I was talking about, Kondo, I think is in the second row, first one. They are thinking these days with children, street kids, large groups, is that they're better off in smaller groups. So we have now created a village. We had some land. Again, it's about 4 miles outside of the centre of the city. And the children are housed in 4 houses we've built. And as I speak to you, there's another 4 being built. And they should be open, well, certainly before the year is over. Each house has a house mother and a house auntie. There are 7 children in each house, except for one house which had 8. and there is an overall house mum, who was the lady in the background of your picture, at the top left-hand corner as you face it. And they're doing a wonderful job. And the village has been a huge, huge success. But which 29 kids could we put in? Nobody had the faintest idea. So what they did, they took the youngest. They went to the street kids' home, and there was obviously some thought about where there were siblings, but in very broad terms, they took the youngest. So the youngest one there, when the home was opened, which was only a year ago, was a year and a half. They're all between that and 8 and 9, except for one girl who was the sister of one of the other kids, who's 12. That's why we got the odd 29. She was the 8th in the one house. So those kids went out there. the statistic that I hate is that of those children, and you'll see the beautiful little kids, 80% of them have been sexually abused. 80%. So, you know, one doesn't have to say anymore. All right, I'm sorry to rabbit on.
However, because I think Michael could spend 3 hours...
Oh, easily. We haven't even started about Rayong and the HIV kids and all the rest of it.
Janet, I'd like you to come out as well. And also Pauline. Come and stand here, Michael, because I think as I hear these stories, the work, and...
Before... David, may I just say one more brief thing about Father Ray, because this is all about him. And if I may crave your indulgence and just quote, two little quotes. Father Ray last visited the UK in 2002 and preached at Westminster Cathedral during a mass to celebrate the 30th anniversary of the charity. Incidentally, Father Ray died in some years ago. He was 71, so he died in 03. During his homily, Father Ray spoke of one severely deformed, mentally retarded baby who had been given to the home and placed in a bed next to a Down syndrome child. Soon the two became friends. They would reach out and hold hands. One day one of them died. The other one was inconsolable, refused to eat, and died soon after. For us it was a real lesson in God's infinite wisdom, Father Ray said. These two children were severely handicapped, but they knew love, and they knew it deeply. He then described a young girl who had lost her leg in an accident and came to the school to study computer technology. She told me she never thought she would be able to live a normal life or be able to send money to her family. She graduated from us and got a good job, and she fell in love with another of our students who'd lost both legs. I married them, and he is now the principal of our school. So I think those two comments say a lot about Father Ray, don't they?
I just want us to close in prayer. As we've heard this, I feel immensely privileged that we're just a small part of it, don't you guys? Do you? Yeah. Do you, you know, we